to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, my face, Dice and Jacks. After Maui, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 10. S&P futures down 33. Dow futures down 107. I looked last night and we weren't down this much, but then somebody started shooting people in Hong Kong. That caused a bit of a problem. Hong Kong violence escalates with bullets, tear gas, and a man on fire. That can't be good.
No.
So we're sneaking down a little bit there. We've got oil is down a full percent as well, down 78 cents, actually a percent and a half. It's not a whole lot, but some. We got gold up 220, but it's still way below what it has been. So a little bit of reaction to the Hong Kong violence. And, you know, at the end of the day with this trade thing, we still have two very different countries on kind of different paths. And we've got the issue here, which, you know, to a certain extent we had before World War II. Or, Maddie, are you in the camp where it's World War I and World War II, or it's just one war with a big break in the middle?
Good question. I think you could argue that it's one war with a big break in the middle, but I tend to side with the standard historical.
You're going to roll with the call on the field?
Yes.
Hey, speaking of which, why exactly were there like two or three at least egregious face mask things in the bear game at Tenacket call? I mean, he's got somebody on the phone, but we'll get him back.
You said you asked about face masks.
What is two or three egregious face masks, Fenley, in the bear game on both sides that didn't get called?
I was at the game, so I didn't see it.
Well, they kept playing a replay. Oh, God. He grabbed him and spun the guy down.
There was one I saw that was missed in the late afternoon game. I think it was the Green Bay Carolina game.
A couple there, too.
Yeah. I mean, it happens fast. I could see where it's hard to see it, but. Yeah, those are big plays because they're 15-yard penalties, and when you miss one, or you know, I'd rather them call those more accurately and let some of the pass interference and defensive holdings go. I mean, good God, every other play it's holding on the defense or pass interference. Usually the one on Harrison Smith last night in the Vikings game I thought was atrocious, and it almost lost the game for the Vikings. Fortunately for them, they were able to make enough plays and still win.
How good is that one kid on the? And the Dallas, the guy when he went on the sideline passes where he's got like his two toenails like in boxing.
Amari Cooper, yeah, no, the guy's
it's
on
unbelievable.
Fire.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's really, really good. Ever since they've gotten him, they've been a completely different team.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, there was a lot of stuff going on yesterday. The Irish, big upsets in college football. College hockey, I watched some of that. The Irish played OSU, and OSU, I don't think he's had a team that long, but they were awful good. And so the Irish are in the Big Ten for hockey, right?
That's correct. I think there's maybe 8 or 10 teams.
I think there's 8 because I think you need 8 to form a league, and I believe that the last team that they got in there to form a team was Penn State.
Yeah, that sounds right. I know Michigan and Michigan State have strong programs. Minnesota obviously has a strong program. Wisconsin has a strong program. So of the traditional Big Ten teams, that's what, 5? Ohio State, I think, does, right?
Well, yeah, they definitely do.
So that's 6. And then they added Notre Dame and then... Penn State. Or is there another small school? Like
I don't think so. Illinois is not. Oh, no, they're not. I don't think they're in the Big Ten.
Okay.
They're in that team with... right along the river that won the NCAA 2 years ago.
Yeah, I have no idea. And, St. Cloud or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, when I was in school, the college, the big two teams... Two conferences were the Ivy League, obviously, and then it was the what the hell did they call it? That the Irish were in. They were in with Michigan, Michigan State, Minnesota, Duluth, Wisconsin. I think Minnesota was in there, and I think it was Denver. It was the 8th team.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Denver was obviously a serious powerhouse. Two best teams virtually every year were Denver and Wisconsin. And the Irish were, like, kind of right there. This is when I was in school. And couple years they were better than Denver, and 1 year they could have beat Wisconsin. They didn't. They got a cheap penalty call. The playoffs used to be two games in a row, and it was a total goal, so the two games, which is kind of weird.
That's really weird. So it didn't matter if you lost? One and 1-1?
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yeah, it was a total goals for the two games, so.
That's like soccer.
Yeah, this is 45 years ago. I mean, hey, Art, how are you?
Good morning, just fine.
You pretty happy with the snow and beautiful weather?
Wait, I've lost you. Hold on.
Pretty happy with the snow and beautiful weather?
As I speak, I'm taking the dogs out for the first time today. The little one is not happy.
No, I don't think she is. When you're sort of low to the ground and you're female, this is not a good thing.
She's looking at me like it's all my fault.
Well, isn't it?
I wish I had that much control.
Well, one of the reasons why I asked Dodd on was we had a gentleman from Credit Union One and last week, Todd Gunderson, and he was terrific on Friday, and they were talking about mortgages and so forth, and now they're really trying to get in all these different areas that we may have identified on the show as being very non-competitive banks. I mean, the difference in prices and service you get in some of these credit unions is dramatic, and or at least it looks like it to me. And I was, you know, we haven't had it on in a while anyway, talk about the real estate situation. But what are the status of the mortgages? Are those guys, are they competitors, the credit unions?
Oh, I think more and more so. I think for years, especially when we were growing up, most people didn't have access to credit unions. Credit unions are something that if you were a steel worker or a carpenter or electrician, you had them. They weren't usually available for the general public kind of thing. I think that's was at least the norm. That was the norm when I was growing up. You had to actually belong to something to get into, you know, a union, a credit union. That's what it was. But now a lot of credit unions are just public places, and you go in and you open your checking account, your bank account, get your car loan, get your house loan, and it's a good thing. They offer a lot of great competitive services.
I think back when
it's nice to see the field opening up, and like anything else, the more competition, the better the services and prices become.
Well, I think the I'm going to say back in our day, this is still our day, I hope, but I mean, I know the one like the church credit unions, they didn't do mortgages.
I don't even remember that. I don't remember a church credit union.
Well, the highest they ever went was car loans.
$500.
Yeah, but no, they would do a car loan. But I'm sort of curious. I wonder if the steel workers credit union or the DuPage, you know, public employees credit union would do a mortgage 50 years ago.
No, my dad was a steel worker. My dad worked for Inland Steel and Ryerson Steel, and they had a credit union. If you maybe biggest thing they did in my memory was a car loan.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Small personal loan. When the employees happen to go on strike or something, they'd be there for them. But they had savings accounts, they had car loans, but at that time, you know, a mortgage was not something you went to your local bank, which then was your local bank. It wasn't a big conglomerate. They're your savings and loans and your local bank.
When's the last time you did a mortgage with a savings and loan? Are they still around even?
I don't even know of one.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, the ones that still
call them. Whatever happened to that whole concept?
Well, the concept they blew out during the Volcker years, and they never came back.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I seem to believe that their charter, they had 85% of the loans had to be mortgages or something, didn't they? 80 or 85?
There was some percentage because then the neighborhood benefited.
And they got all kinds of, for a long time they didn't have checking accounts either. As I recall.
The thing I remember is when Tallman, let me date myself as a Southsider even, when Tallman, the favorite thing, when I was a little kid, we'd go to the bank on Saturday with, you know, Dad's paycheck or whatever, and they had free donut holes and coffee, and I thought donut holes are awesome.
Yeah.
Best thing about the savings loan when I was a kid.
Well, my mom worked a little while for Concordia, a little part-time job, Concordia savings loan. They were in the Evergreen Plaza, and I think they got to the point where you brought in loans, they gave you a toaster or something. They were giving, then they had a law, get a list, Maddie. Whenever you open up an account, they'd give you something. It'd be like a toaster or a vacuum cleaner. Then there was a, what, a $20 limit on what everybody could pay. So you look around and say, the ones with the best toasters, you know, that maybe were right up against the $20 limit. That's where you open your account at. It was kind of a different world. But, hey, you know, we've been talking on the show a lot about, you know, some of these inflation numbers. And he's going to roll his eyes and say, but I've actually been trying to do some research on some of the stuff I've been saying to kind of, I'll say, prove it to people how this has been. And I dug out, Matt, he went around last week, but I found some, now that you're here, maybe we'll tweet it out to everybody, but an amazing site. Takes every college in the country and takes and has a tuition every year going back to 2000. Is that unbelievable how I found this thing?
Wow.
Well, the fact that I could find it is also unbelievable, but the fact that somebody did it is really the unbelievable thing. And the not only have the most of the, you know, it's sort of weird. I don't remember this, but you're younger. Maybe you do. What do you suppose happened in the 98-99 school year where all of a sudden every big state institution bifurcated in-state students versus out-of-state students? Before that, everybody was the same. Then all of a sudden, 98-99, everybody was the same. And all of a sudden, 99-2000, everybody like doubled the out-of-state tuition thing. What do you suppose happened that year to cause?
I was in high school. I don't know, but that certainly affected my demographic and age group.
Oh, so you remember that? Okay.
I mean, I don't remember it being like a flip of a switch, but I remember learning about that as you started to look at schools that there was a difference. Yeah.
I mean, that was
almost the beginning of this whole crazed tuition price race, I think.
I would think you're right. Yeah. I mean, 2000 seems to be about the year, and I don't quite know why that all happened, but maybe it was. Maybe less, you know, tax help or something. I don't know what it was, but the weird part of it was, is I went through a lot of the calculations. Virtually every, if you take 2000 to today and you run it through the CPI calculator, your stuff should be up like 51-52%. Well, that's a laugh, right? Because most college tuitions are up slightly below 300%. 275, 280, somewhere in there.
Yeah, is the education worth anymore? I think not.
As you what? No, well, here's the interesting part. And some of this, I think, you know, people are demanding, I guess, but the most outrageous piece is the room and board. I mean, I don't know what...
Because they have cafeterias. I mean, some of these college campuses, they're equivalent to a restaurant. It's not like they're flinging a sloppy joe and some instant mashed potatoes at you like, you know, we had.
Well, in 1974, when I graduated, my room and board was... I know what it was because that's what I got paid as an RA. I got free room and board. I think it was like $1,050, maybe $1,200, something like that. Well, now Notre Dame is $16,000, and it should be you know, two and a quarter times what it was, and it's 15 times. It's not, we're not even on the same planet. So
what I think is strange though too. I mean, look at it. Almost became then like the business. I mean, I remember. You know, when I was going to schools, I mean, there were colleges, but it wasn't like there was a college on every corner. Like, everybody jumped on the bandwagon and opened a college. You know, and all these junior colleges proliferated. And now a lot of those state places are struggling.
You know,
the tuition went up. I don't think the quality of education went up. And now it's like anything else. There are too many places.
Well, the community colleges have actually gone up percentage-wise faster than the big ones. And, you know, that the get a load of this. This floored me. Richard J. Daley, used to be known as Southwest University, it's in Ford City, so 71st and whatever, Cicero.
Well, now they have other places too, so, you know.
Well, get a load of this. They have an out-of-state rate.
Oh, you gotta go with the crowd, Tom. You know that.
But it's 30 miles to the border, for God's sake. How many people in Indiana go to Richard J. Daley College?
Be interesting to find out, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, anyway, so here's what, so I continued my research this weekend, since I had people over working, and I dug in, and it's one of the hardest things to find, a lot harder than the other one. So I had a zero on in Illinois. Now, to the extent that Illinois is different than the rest of the country, I don't know if it's that much different, but Illinois has, you know, obviously a big chunk into property taxes. So what I'm saying here is that when you don't include property taxes in your CPI, which I don't think they do, you're really 50 to 60% of your property taxes are really the price of education, right?
Well, I can see that on my checks, but when I get it, it is half of my checks.
Is so. It? Is it? What, I'm going to guess 55% or so. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Right here. Here's the residential property taxes in Illinois. This is why I think when the people we pay to be on TV start telling you there's no inflation, I think they're full of whatever, and they should know that. They should really all know that. Since 1963, Illinois property taxes have grown 2.5 times faster than inflation. And 14 times faster than the state's population. That's special, isn't it? Look at the presidential property tax alone. Since, by the way, this is from Illinois Policy. What is this thing? Maybe this article. Growing out of control. Property taxes put increasing burden on Illinois taxpayers by Eric Randolph, Ted Dabrowski, and John Kleininger. This is from the Illinois Policy Institute. The ones we're going to specify here is 99... Since 1990, we've got residential property taxes in Illinois have grown 3.3 times faster than median household incomes. That's special.
Well, you know, what the state is obviously they're looking for anywhere revenue to plug their incredible mismanagement of our funds, but they're hitting a thing, and I think the real estate market is kind of the canary in the coal mine on this. Of course, it is real estate taxes, but what's happening in the sales area, and I would bet this is not only in my area, but throughout the area, is A, the first thing that happened was the $10,000 tax max for to write off. But with the taxes, people are now buying a house, not just based on the location, what are the taxes? It used to be a minor question because people kind of knew what they were, but now... That entire market, if anything under 250 in the southwest suburbs, is flying off the shelves if it's nice. But once you hit, let's say, 4, the brakes get applied and people question it. Because, you know, once you see taxes for the average working person, once taxes get over 8 grand, then it's 10 grand. I mean, that's a chunk of change. Now you're paying, get to the point where you're paying $1,000 a month in taxes to live in your house. Not counting your mortgage, and a lot of times taxes are more than your mortgage, so it's crazy, and they're going to shoot themselves in the foot if they don't find another way to raise revenue, because they're damaging the housing market, the move-up market, the move-around market, and even just people who want to live in a beautiful house, but then their seniors say and they want to live in a beautiful townhome. It's a lateral move financially. And it's not happening. They're leaving the state. The percentage is up higher again of people going to Indiana and Wisconsin again.
Well, then they're not much better. Actually, the middle, the whole middle part of the country is not that great.
Well, Indiana's taxes are still dramatically cheaper. Dramatically cheaper.
Right, I mean, stifle yourself for a second because I'm getting to that one. That's further down the page. But this one.
Well, yeah, I'm ahead of you. What can I tell you?
You are ahead of me. What can I tell you? But here's the one that absolutely bites you right in behind. Well, not this one. Illinois residential property tax burden as a percentage of median household income has risen 76%. And since 1990, most median household income is up 10%. So that's a tremendous, but get a load of this, Ed. You'll love this one. And Maddie as well, and hopefully Elizabeth. If Illinois froze its residential, this is how far they are ahead of it. If Illinois froze its residential property taxes today, how many years would it take for the property tax burden to return to 1990 levels based on how much wages are increasing?
17 years?
28.
Wow.
Isn't that unbelievable? Man, do you believe that? It's just
crazy.
Anyway.
It is crazy. It's unfortunate. But people think, like some people we won't mention, that renting is better, but if a landlord has taxes, they're passing them on to you anyway. So, you know, they're really... Illinois is just damaging. They've got to find another way to raise money besides real estate, because real estate, as a realtor, you know, I do believe that, you know, under everything is the land. The people who own the house that have a vested interest in their country are better citizens, better, you know, homeowners. Say, you know, have a vested interest in everything, and it's a foundation of security, I believe. So the more difficult you make that ability to own a home, the less secure people are, I believe.
Well, you can't.
You have record low interest rates, and the market is busy, and there are, you know, it's a very busy fall for myself, at least. I'm having a really good year, and that's great, but the first thing people will do after they ask the price of the house is, what are the taxes?
Well, the reason why you're having a good year is because you know what you're doing.
Well, thank you, darling.
But, as a matter of fact, I'm going to give you a second, even though I'm going to follow up on your Indiana thing, but, give you a second on this weekend, how you had the difference where you, instead of having the, you talk the people into changing some of the furniture around, some, moving something out and painting a couple of rooms, and all of a sudden everybody wanted the place for 2 weeks ago. They didn't want it at all. How much that can make a difference?
Well, you know, it'd be staging the house, as they call it in the business, is a very important thing. And I think it's just like anything. You live in a house long enough, you get used to your surroundings, and you go, yeah, I like my house, you know. And the hardest thing is to go in to tell somebody anything and say, you know what, I know you like your house, but if you want to sell it, it's no longer your house. You have to prepare it for the next buyers coming along. And especially if people have lived in a house for a while, maybe it's, the furniture is dated, the colors are dated. Like anything else, colors are coming in and out of fashion. So in order to approach a homeowner with that, you really have to sit down and explain the value of catering to today's buyer. If the average person who's selling their house, let's say in Orland, has a tri-level, they don't want the stairs anymore, they want to start downsizing to a ranch, they probably are in their, let's say, late 50s to mid-70s, when the stairs are finally getting to them and they want to move. Maybe that house is, you know, they've got the furnace, the roof, maybe change the carpeting or something, but a lot of people just, you know, you just live with what you have. But now the person who's buying that house is probably anywhere from their mid-20s to 40, and the tastes are obviously not the same. So you have to cater to your new buyer to bring them in, get them to see the value in your house, and sometimes it has, really helps to have an outside person say, hey, if we just do this, if we change the paint, if we move the furniture, if we take the ratty old Lazy Boy recliner out of the fireplace and we have the stuffing coming out of it and brighten up the room and just put, you know, different colors, a throw rug. What we did in the house that had my clients have the most beautiful house with related living, it's got a 28-foot-long kitchen, a 32-foot-long family room with a beautiful fireplace. It's a beautiful, beautiful home. But they couldn't see it through the eyes of a new buyer. So it took a while, but we painted it the new light, I call it grayish, cross between gray and beige, very, very light, beautiful new flooring, carpeting, moved some furniture around, and I had every person who walked in yesterday who was in that, I would say, 30s target range, loved the house. So it was an investment in their, some of their money, but I believe they'll get a minimum of twice their investment back for their staging.
I'm going to change, this is what I do, I change topics back and forth, because you mentioned that the property tax is becoming a bigger burden on people. So get a load of this. 1990... How much was the average property tax a burden on household income? What percent?
I'll tell you in a second. I would say, going back to my parents' little house in Chicago, where I grew up, I would say 5%.
It was 3.6. 2013, 6.4. Today, it's got to be 7.5, easy. Maybe 8.
That was a good guess. That was a good guess.
That's a pretty good guess on your part.
Right.
Well, we got off here to break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about some of these other charts here. I mean, the reason why these charts are right where you think they are. That's the scary part, because you're in the business. S&P futures down 10, Dow futures down 104. A lot of because of Hong Kong. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Just went over the board with Audrey Johnson with us. Mr. John Flanagan in a few minutes. SP futures down 11.25. NASDAQ futures down 35.50. Trying to get their economic calendar up for us here as well. Dow futures down 116. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 59.5%. What's it down 96? That's a full 1.3%. Is there any Brexit issues yet again? GEC around down 1. All that flat, so they're hanging in there. Nikkei down 60.3%. Shanghai, however, down 54, it's 1.8%. Get a load of this one, though. Hang Seng down 724, it's 2.6%. The Hong Kong situation is not good. We're actually using real bullets here today, and it's, and I got some report of a guy on fire. I didn't want to look, so I didn't look at it. So, when he wants to give that story, they got to, maybe Maddie will look and see the guy burning. I don't want to look.
I'm good, thanks.
10-year yield, 1.94 up again. The Bund, minus 0.25. Japan minus 0.06. Again, we're going up all around the world. Gold is now up, well, $1.70, which isn't very much. $14.64. Silver up 1 cent. $16.83 was over $18 like 2 weeks ago. Oil down 73 cents, $56.55. The range is run up a dollar. Instead of being 52 to 55 and a half, now it's, well, let's say 53 and a half to 57 and a half. So the range has moved up, I think, maybe for a while. Natural gas, 2.67, is down 11 cents. RBOB gas, 1.61. Maddie, we have for us traffic with our sports. The Bears, Super Bowl bound. If they could play Detroit every week, they'd be fine.
That would help, especially with their backup quarterback. 36 yeah. minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. If you haven't checked out your window yet, it is a snowy morning here in Chicagoland, especially to the north and northwest suburbs. More accumulation, but even in the city, we are getting some snow. It's not really sticking too much yet, but starting to increase in volume, and it's affecting the roadways. So in spite of it being Veterans Day and having lighter traffic volumes, we still have slow traffic times on the Edens and Kennedy due to the snowy conditions. Eisenhower and Stevenson are looking okay. No issues on the Southside expressways as far as significant delays. We do have an issue. Stevenson southbound at LaGrange Road, a pickup truck went into the wall on the long ramp to LaGrange. So that is causing some delays as folks navigate around that. There's probably going to be a lot of that throughout the morning, slippery conditions out there. So give yourself...
Go faster. If you got four-wheel drive, just go faster.
That's right. Off the expressways, we have a crash at Lamont Road and 87th Street. Just north of there, Main Street in Downers Grove at 63rd, there is an accident. And then Finley Road at the Veterans Memorial Tollway, which is I-355. As you're getting onto I-355, there's a crash there as well. So, and one other crash here, it looks like, just came across the Jane Addams Tollway, Chief. I-90 westbound at Route 53, the center lane is blocked due to a crash. So the accidents are starting to pile up even as we speak. Weather today, snowy conditions on and off throughout the morning. Our high is where we're at right now, 32 degrees. We'll be right around freezing throughout the day. And then tonight, we have a significant cold front moving in, a low of 12 degrees tonight. And then tomorrow's high, just 24. So we'll be well below normal freezing conditions for mid-November. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 86 today. Right now it's clear and 60. In sports, the Bears snapped their four-game losing skid, coming back to beat the Lions 20-13. Bears trailed 6-0 late in the second quarter, and then executed a long drive highlighted by a Mitch Trubisky touchdown pass to Ben Broniker for the 18-yard touchdown. A great play, actually, a corner route. And then the Bears scored 20 straight points, highlighted by a couple more touchdown passes from Trubisky in the third quarter, and held on to beat the Lions 20-13. So the Bears are now 4-5 and snapped that four-game skid. Cardinals lost to the Buccaneers 30-27. Sunday Night Football was the Vikings over the Cowboys in Dallas 28-24. In hockey, Blackhawks outlasted the Leafs 5-4. Coyotes were off. They're at the Capitals tonight. NBA basketball, Bulls were off last night. They don't return to action until tomorrow night against the Knicks. The Suns blew out the Nets last night, 138-112. Chief.
When the Fisher Falcons played in the Thanksgiving Day Bowl at St. Rita Stadium, which had no grass on it whatsoever, it was all dirt, they were the first time we ever get, like, the starting team got their name announced, and of course they'd, starting in, Matt Weber and the rest of the team, who's he? A very, very eighth grade thing to do, as you can imagine.
Yes.
We're talking a little bit about these taxes, and we'll have to lob this one out there to everybody. I'll get it to you, Maddie. But Illinois is one of the property tax rate is 2.3%. But I'll just get back to what you mentioned. For somebody, if you're talking about an average person, 6.4%, which I'm going to guess, like I said, is 2013. It's got to be. I'm going to push 8 in Chicago. In Illinois.
Hey, Maddie, not to interrupt. Can you maybe give me a little boost in volume here? I'm losing you guys. I can't hear you.
Okay. So the what I'm saying is, if you retire and you're in your place, that number gets to be pretty dramatic. If you're on Social Security or whatever, on a pension.
Yeah, well, hopefully you get the senior exemption, to offset it. But yeah, it's still crazy money. It's still crazy money. I mean, that it's. Hurts the economy because, of course, one way or another, that money would get spent, but to spend it on housing taxes and not invested in possibly Illinois and the businesses in there, I think it's short-sighted to keep raising. Just let people take their extra cash and spend it in the businesses in Illinois, maybe people won't be running away to other states.
Well, it buries your idea of what the CPI is, especially if over half of it's for schools. You're essentially pulling education out of the CPI, which is insanity when you think about it, because it's obviously a lot of what people spend. But by the way, on your Illinois thing, Illinois is now number two behind New Jersey. And actually, according to this article here, if you redid it for the property tax increase in Chicago, was it last year? We could actually be ahead of New Jersey now. Wouldn't that be great? Wisconsin is number five. So the property tax rate in Illinois, it's hard to get an average on this stuff. So I mean, when I'm quoting this, they had a zero in some of the areas in Chicago. If you look at small counties versus big ones, a big difference. Anyway, the property tax rate in Illinois is roughly 2.3% of the value of the house. It's pretty friggin' high. I mean, it's pretty high. The only other one I think over two is New Jersey. But there must be a couple of other, because Wisconsin is number five in the country at 1.96. I don't think you're escaping there. Michigan.
Well, I think you're escaping, but I think, personally, I've never driven on a bad Wisconsin road and trying to drive through
Chicago
streets. It's like a pot. It's like trying to go through a minefield.
That's another whole story now. Now, the Kennedy actually has nothing but potholes in it, and that thing wasn't redone all that long ago. But
I know.
Know what I'm saying? But, yeah, now that's another whole can of worms. We're just talking about numbers here. Michigan, 1.78, so they're number 9. And Ohio is 1.55, and they're number 12. So you got to get all the way down. You are correct about Indiana. 0.86, they're down to 28. So they're lower there. But don't they mash you on your auto? Don't you got to pay a percentage of the price of the car every year for your title or for your license or something?
It's a percentage when you buy the car, when you buy your plates. I don't think it's every year. It's like when you buy a car, you get charged like the size of the car or how much the car is worth. But it's not a yearly gouge. It's when you buy the car.
What if you're a guy like Manny that drops a big sheet, 100G, for his new Mercedes? Now, what's he going to pay in Indiana?
Yeah. What can I tell you?
Maybe one of your listeners
will let us know what they're doing.
When you get the $100,000 one, are you going to park it in front of the house or are you going to rent a garage?
If I have a $100,000 car, it's
not. I was going to say, No, maybe somebody else is parking it for you.
That's right.
Just saying, you know.
Hey, before I forget, it is Veterans Day, and I'd like to put a thanks out there to all the veterans, all the soldiers, take care of us day in and day out over the years, and let us be able to sit and talk in freedom on this radio program. So thank you, everybody.
I would agree with that. I'm. Why do you suppose it's changed in our lifetime, Aud? That now everybody's got to say something marketing wise. Not you for veterans. It's got to be in the paper. It's got to be at the Hawk games or whatever. And yet, when you get out to the veterans' home in Manteno, the place is a third full because they won't let people in because they don't have the taxing to take care of these people. Does everybody just talk about it, or do we actually care for anybody?
Well, I think if you don't talk about it somewhere, it doesn't become an issue like the veterans' care in the best medical care. Obviously, some of it is marketing, but again, some of it, like a VA loan, for example. I mean, a lot of times veterans don't use their benefits because they don't know how. But I understand what you mean. But I think anything that highlights a veteran and the service to our country, to me, is good. But I agree. The better all the people who are forgotten in the homes, not even just veterans, all seniors. You got nothing to do. You think your life is bad? Go take yourself down to a home and go visit some people. There. That would be something to do for everybody who's too busy on their phone and video games. Go visit a vet. Go to a nursing home.
Before we let you go, is a VA loan that much? Is it really good for people that can get one? Is it better than FBA?
It's a great benefit for. It's a small way, I think, to say thank you to those who served their country. It's a 0% down, and what prevents a lot of people is you need to get your VA certificate to get a loan. It's not that hard. Realtors can help you do it. Loan officers can help you do it. So if you're looking to get a house and you were a service that served our country and you want to get a home, a townhome, a farm, there's lots of ways where you could get it. So sign up for that, take advantage, and get your VA certificate.
right. And what, you, what percent down? How much is the rate? Or is the rate changing?
0% down for vets.
Okay. Well, that's cool. And but the rate's
yep.
competitive with
what? Whatever the current rate is, like anything else. But zero down payment, so.
That's for 30 years?
Take the benefits and use them.
That's a 30-year?
It could be whatever you want it to be, and the wives of servicemen are eligible, the spouses are. So, you know, that benefit is there, and make sure you use it. Get something back there.
Well, that is good. Rod, thank you very much. As usual, insightful. We have Mr. Jan Flanagan. We're just going to write to Jan, Mitty. Jan, you're here.
I'm
here.
We're
right
good
to
morning,
you. Tom. How are you?
I'm good, and you?
All right, I was going to talk to you about property tax rates and everything, and then I already talked about them. Hold on.
Well, yeah, I was fascinated when you were talking about community colleges versus in-state versus out-of-state tuition, and that was my focus when I was teaching. I was in the community college system in Illinois, and I think really any community college near Indiana had a flourishing student body coming from Indiana because
really?
Indiana doesn't have a geographically based community college system as Illinois does. There is a so-called community college system, but the campuses are spread out. They're not convenient to a lot of people. And if you lived in a county contiguous to Illinois, it made sense for you to come into Illinois and take courses at the Illinois Community College, even at the out-of-state rate, which was a big difference from the in-state rate. So Illinois's got 48 of these districts. You know, the whole state's carved up into these things across county boundaries, and the tax base for that particular district supports a portion of the budget for that community college. I don't think there's too many other models that work quite the same way as Illinois does. And Illinois was
What's Kevin's group? Obviously, our friend Kevin, who's in Wednesday and Friday, helps me out when nobody calls in. His group, he's in Indiana, and they have community colleges at four or five. Are his. I don't know.
Is that Ivy Tech or is it?
No.
I'm not sure what the. There is a. But as far as I know, there is not a system of them where they are. There are a number of them that sort of govern that little jurisdiction that they've been given for their taxpayers. And it's like a state university system where there are campuses, but they don't really. Try to serve all the people within the state, so it's not convenient, to commute to a lot of these places.
Well,
there's just not as many of them.
Like my buddy Jim Oyland has been a contributor to the show. He's an attorney from Steamboat Springs. Now, he teaches two or three law classes in Steamboat, and when he does, it's like the Hollywood Squares at four other places, four other towns. And I think that's what Kevin's group is doing in Indiana. So instead of, making sure they have campuses all over the place, they're going with the smaller campuses, and if they're a teacher in one place, can be teaching in all the different places as well, I think.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So in Chicago, I think they're more unique campuses, I believe.
That's right. And, the Chicago City Colleges is one of these 48 community college districts in the state of Illinois, and it has multiple campuses, as other community colleges do too. But you've got, Daly College, you've got Olive Harvey, and all these are not unique to the neighborhoods that they are situated in. Anybody from Chicago can go to any of these campuses, although it makes more sense to go to the one closest to you.
Well, Olive Harvey used to be Thornton Junior College.
It was Southeast. It was the campus that was at CVS High School on 87th Street, the old Southeast Junior College, it was called. And it was an amalgamation of that. And I'm trying to remember, it might have been...
It was Thornton, I think, because they came to Marist and taught a couple classes.
Yeah.
Well, then they built it on the dump.
Mount Carmel, too. We had Olive Harvey teachers coming into Mount Carmel to teach my last year.
Well, they weren't Olive Harvey then, but when you got your transcript the next year, they were Olive Harvey.
Yeah.
They built the college on the dump, across the street from the dump. But a great spot, Maddie. The great ambiance with your nose.
Yes.
Did you get Did you get credit at Notre Dame for years?
No, I didn't. I didn't. They wouldn't give me credit for a psych class and a sociology class that I took with a college teacher. I had a transcript from Olive Harvey College. But Notre Dame would not.
I know they wouldn't take mine either.
For it. So they did for my AP coursework that I took, but they wouldn't for that. So I ended up taking the same class again freshman year with the same textbook. So I was a little frosted.
Well, the guy told me, "I'll give you credit. That was good for you to do that. Here's your credit."
I think my counselor was having a bad day the day I was in there.
God. So what happened, Jen, in 1998? I'll tell you all about Prairie State, which is where you taught, correct?
Yeah.
1998, in-state tuition, $1,770. Out-of-state tuition, $1,770. Okay. 1999, in-state tuition, $1,770. Get a load of this. Out-of-state tuition, guess how much, Matty?
I don't know, 30?
1,000?
You were saying 1770.
$1,770. This is 1999.
Oh, you're talking like prehistoric times.
Well, I'm talking about also a two-year community college.
Okay. What is it, 35?
$6,100.
Oh, wow, way more.
They went from $1,700 to $6,100. What the hell happened in 1990, John, or 1999?
Yeah, I was trying to think of that when you were and Audrey were talking. What happened that at that particular time period, and I have to go back and dig around because I remember there being much discussion about out-of-state tuition rates being kind of a new deal around that time. And there had been a fair number of out-of-state students. Well, there always had been, really, I think, in the community colleges along the Indiana border. It dried up a little bit, but it's was still flourishing when I retired. And to cap it off, too, they were competing with other institutions for athletes, other athletic scholarships. They were pushing,
God.
Out-of-state tuition. It was all a grab. And part of it, I think, may have been that the state, that's when the state began to really renege on its contributions for each of the community college districts. It had been an ideal formula where the state contributed a third of the college's budget, local taxes another third, and student tuition the remaining third. That was supposedly how the budget was.
Yeah, but John, that's four times as much in one year.
Yeah, and it's just I think now I'd really have to. I know that out of state tuition there now is something like $500 a credit hour.
I think I'm so careful because I'm looking right at the numbers.
Yeah.
In 2018-2019 school year, in-state, $5,220. So that's up from, $1,100. So that's a lot of dough in 20 years. Again, from 1998 to 2018, the CPI says you should be up roughly 50%, 48 to 52, somewhere in there. So this is up from 1770 to 5220. So most of them are like just about, like I said, they're almost across the board, Jan. They're like 280%. Not 300. They're not triple, but they're way more than double. And virtually everywhere is the same way. Right. So they're essentially five times the CPI industry in the index for in state. Guess what out of state is now? 13.8. So,
yikes.
It's from 1998, 1770 to 13.8. So what is that? Almost 6.5 times as much.
Jeez,
it's incredible. This is a junior college. Junior college percentage changes are worse than the other ones. So
that's exacerbated because by the fact that that sort of is a response. It's not the whole thing. That whole increase is not a response. But as the state has contributed now, it's supposed to be 33%, and I think it's down around 15-16% that comes from the state. The rest of that comes through tuition dollars. That's why a lot of these numbers have jacked up precipitously as the state's responsiveness to this has declined. They're not supporting community colleges the way they were designed to be, and of course they're not supporting anything else the way it was designed to be.
The theme that Odd wanted to get on when she when we boot her for you. She's right. Not only how much more are you paying in taxes, but what are you getting? So it'd be, we have the taxes going up and the stuff they're supporting. I mean, where the bleep is the money going? I guess is the question. And you ask yourself that, and how can you even answer the question? It's so crazy. But without asking any personal questions, we have a 52% CPI. We've got a 2.5 times on the in-state tuition, and we got almost 6 times on the out-of-state. What would you say the average professor's salary is up since 1999?
Oh, I would say it's more like 15-20% maybe.
I mean, it hasn't,
25% maybe.
It's not even up to the 50%. So if you're making $30,000 in 1999, you're not even making $45,000 today. I got to believe you are.
Well, yeah, I think you are too, and I know that salaries have, you look at a 2.5 to 3.5% increases with the contracts that we had, but compared to other community college districts, compared to the city colleges, we were way down.
So I'm going to say if it's 2.5%, you're probably up. If you were $30,000, I'll bet you're 50.
Yeah, I'd say 50.
So you're up way better than the average person, but you're not keeping pace with the tuition at all.
Right.
By the way, Chief, Kevin writes in, Ivy Tech has 19 campuses throughout the state of Indiana. Lake County, Valparaiso, and Michigan City cover northwest Indiana near the Chicago area.
So take that, Flanny.
Yeah. Well, we got 48.
Yeah. did he say that at the end of the email? Take that, Flanny. But they've been growing too. I mean, and Kevin's a part of that.
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, we always give him kudos for that, because that's, well, here's a good one though, Jen. Just to make you ill, reach for the. I just happen to have Northwestern University here, private 4-year. 1998. Guess what?
25,000, 30,000.
Close. 22,400. Today, this is just tuition, today.
Oh, geez, 50, 52?
55. So it's, am I right? It's all about, Maddie, this is amazing, is it? They're all about 2.6 to 2.8 times as much as they were in 99. There's an amazing consistency here.
Yeah. Well, I think it's it's a bubble, and it's fueled by the financial aid engine. And that's, when there's cash around and, it's supposed to cover these costs, the costs are not controlled by the institutions, and it's kind of sucking in all this money. The problem comes, at the other end of it, when you graduate, what do you have, now as a skill that translates to a job? This is when bubbles start to fall apart, is when the scheme collapses and people aren't likely to go into these, vacuums because they're not getting what they expected to get out of them. And I think the education bubble is a more dangerous one even than the housing bubble, because it's been pumping along steadily for
a long time
and hasn't had slumps the way, say, the housing market has. And it's now become ridiculously out of step with everything, so I do see a precipice being approached here.
Well, John, we got to go to break here, but get a load of this: the let's say the median income is 35, it now costs half a year's salary for the median income to room and board some college kid for 9 months, 16,600. What in God's name are you feeding the guy or girl? This has to come with massages with happy endings. It has to. I mean, for God's sake, 16,600 for room and board. What was it? Was 1,000 when we were there.
Yep.
SP Futures down 11.50, NASDAQ Futures down 34. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jacks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. we are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Jan Flanagan, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 12, and the futures down 36. We've been right about here since the bullets started flying in Hong Kong, and you know, Manny will dig in, and I'm going to do traffic weather in a little bit, dig in and see if how many people got killed, if anybody. Hopefully no, but sounds like things had been settling down, or at least it's been off the front page. We've talked a lot about that, how stuff drops off the front page doesn't mean it's actually fixed. But I have a question for you, Johnny. You know, Eric was on Friday, and he's a professor at Columbia, and the room and board is up to like $14,000. But at least there, you're getting essentially an apartment on State Street, for God's sake,
yeah.
Which is different than the dorm room we had with the Army surplus blanket, but the
washstand sticking out of the wall.
Yeah. Well, it's better than having to go down a hall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. But the I got a question. If you got a building on State Street like Sears or Goldblatt or somebody, retail or might even be office, and all of a sudden it gets older or whatever, and all of a sudden, you know, Columbia or Art Institute or somebody buys the place and turns it into a dorm, does that immediately totally come off the tax rolls as now as a nonprofit institution?
Yeah. Well, we're downtown where DePaul bought the whole old Goldblatt store at State and Jackson, the whole block-long building from Jackson to Van Buren is now all, you know, they own almost that whole block now. And that came off the tax rolls once they acquired it. Northwestern University owns a lot of Loop property on LaSalle Street, and, you know, that's not on the tax rolls. So there's a kind of blowback from, you know, having these world-class, you know, institutions here, because it really does dig into the tax revenue that the county expects once these universities start expanding. And expansion is really the name of the game. That seems to be their key to survival, is to keep building, acquiring other properties, build their empire. And, you know, that's good for them, you know, as a recruiting tool. But what it does to tax revenue, I don't think it's ever really been carefully studied. And it could be. I think it's not impossible to get these numbers and look at what happened to revenues for, say, downtown property that is now no longer taxable. So there are consequences to this. And I you know, all that means is that the rest of the taxpayers in the county are getting dinged more to make up this gap.
Why, what you just said is interesting, Jack, because one of my, I don't know if it's a, definitely isn't a theme of the show, but it's, maybe it's a theme of Southsiders, you being one of them, is you get the feeling that whenever anybody gets, quote, a break, especially when an economy is growing, I'll lead this into the economy, it's growing totally half-assed, if at all, like this one, despite what all the people look better than me on national TV say, oh, our economy's great, consumers great, he's confident, he's just bull bleep. I mean, the 1-2% group is doing fine, the rest of people aren't. I mean, you look at these price increases we talk about every day and other things, you know, give me a break. I'm not saying you're destitute. You're not, but you're not. You might, but it's not nirvana either. And I really do believe that anytime somebody, every time it's like silly putty. You take a building off the rolls, you raise everybody else's. Why is it not so? I won't say universally. No, I'm not saying you should think about it all day, because a lot nicer things to think about than that. But it's some of the concepts, Jan. I don't expect everybody to be you know, they have an MBA from the University of Chicago and do this for a living. But it's stunning to me that where I consider to be very intelligent people at you know, gatherings for whatever, there's, you know, 10 people sitting around and you say, and 9 of them will say, well, you know, the best time to buy a house is like right now. And I go, why exactly is that? Interest rates are low. And it is so obvious to me that when you look at a home, the first thing people think of when you walk in there is, how much can I afford per month? That's the number, right?
Right.
And it includes your taxes, your insurance, your mortgage. And your mortgage is a derivative of how much you pay for the place plus the interest rate you're being charged. So, and the lower the interest rate, the more you can pay for the building in the same budgetary number per month. And it's priced that way, correct?
Right.
So if the building, I bought my home in Beverly when the interest rates were like 12%. It was the best buy I ever made.
Yeah.
It started coming down, the house price went whizzing up, right? But, I mean, it really doesn't, when you think of taxes going up, you most people think, and I don't know why, because this is pretty basic economic, most people think of, well, my taxes went up, I'm pissed off. By the way, the little old lady and the old guy, they got to move out of their house because they can't afford them. But really, it's a dramatic lid on the price of the house.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just not thought of that way. I mean, and I don't know why the chicken comes before the egg with a lot of these people. Because, I mean, if you look at, like, Flossmoor, for instance, and you'll say, man, the houses, you can buy a house down there for $175, but, man, your taxes are, like, $35.
Yeah.
Well, but instead of saying, the reason why the damn thing is 175 is because the taxes are 35. I mean, duh. I mean, I don't know. It's just so obvious to me, Jan, and you're not an economist by trade. You're an attorney and an English teacher. God knows what else skills you have that I don't. But even you pick this up. I mean, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, I can afford $3,000 a month for this house. If the state's digging me for $2,500, I'd only leave $500 left for you, right?
Well, and it's the fear factor that people have about real estate taxes, and with good reason, because, you know, every 3 years there is a jump, and you're always, you know, holding on to your seat to see how big that jump is. It isn't like, well, if I sweat it out this time, I'm fine for a while. No, unless you've got a really, you know, small cash flow and you can get a freeze on your taxes, you are sitting on a time bomb.
Well, and, you can get a freeze.
But that takes out of their, kind of their happiness, really, in living in a house, knowing that this could erupt at a time, you know, somewhere down the road, sooner maybe rather than later, and they can't afford to live here anymore. That's kind of a horrible thing to sit on.
If you were to give, and I'm not, ragging on people here, because there's no point in doing that, because I'm sure if I had to do a test about what they did for a living, I'd flunk that. But the phenomenon of, I've yet to see any of the newspapers here, any of the financial stuff, maybe Cranes, I don't read all the time, but Cranes might have something. The phenomenon downtown here, or in the downtown, in the central district, everything is now rental. And even houses condominium buildings are being rebought to go rental. And the phenomenon is simply, it's not about you or I buying a place and maybe getting a freeze. Not to say we're anywhere near 65, but are getting a freeze for the next 5 years, and we're buying a place for 3.5% interest, and our taxes are $2,000 a month. It's not about us. It's about 5 years from now when I go to sell this place, and the interest rates might be 5, and oh, by the way, the taxes might be double, or it won't be double in 5 years. It'll be up 50% if they keep their rate going the way they're doing. Who the hell where's that fool going to come from? Who am I going to sell it to?
Right. Well, you look, the numbers are all tilting in the wrong direction,
yes,
too. You look at you know, the population loss in Chicago, Cook County. You know, a lot of the population from Chicago has gone to other places in Cook County, but you look around the state, and the numbers are telling a very clear story that people are seeing. You know, their future is not in Illinois. The latest numbers I saw for the Chicago public school enrollment down, you know, again, not as bad as the year before.
Not as bad as the year before.
You know, these systems are becoming more and more expensive to operate, and they're serving fewer and fewer people. And they're not magnets to draw people here. I don't see anybody moving to Chicago so they can enroll their kids in the public schools here. They're driving people away, but they're expensive as heck to operate.
Unless you know you're into Walter Payton.
Right.
John, if you were to put a 2 mile rope around State and Madison, maybe it make that 3 mile. How much do you think the population has grown though in that area? It's got to be pretty dramatic.
Yeah, and it's it would probably shock a lot of people to look at the wealth that's concentrated there, and you look at businesses too. I mean, the agglomeration of hospitals, offices are kind of, you know, going the way of the dodo, it seems, but there are still businesses, big businesses that have their headquarters there, and that's intensified in the last 10-15 years. So I would say it would be, you know, alarming to see how much of the wealth of the metro area is concentrated in that little geographical square.
Well, especially since you take the trading floors away. I mean, the area for a long time, especially the whole South Loop area, was totally anchored by the trading floors.
Right.
And that's where all the money was. And the buildings that service them. And now you've essentially taken all that money and given it to four people or five people or firms, which is, to me, an abomination, but, you know, nobody cares about that. But it's a question where is this dough? And I don't know, but you look at that, the taxing phenomenon. That's why people now are, Lake Point Tower, how many people tried to turn that thing condo? Like three before somebody finally pulled it off? And all of a sudden it's going back to being rental.
Right.
But I think that, you know, fool me once, essentially, shame on you. It's shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. The parents of kids that are moving down here, kids that be in their 20s, call them kids, they don't want to help. They used to want to buy a condo for them. Now they don't because they got burned like hell in the early 2000s. Hey, look, rent a place, rent a nice place. I'll give you a grand a month. Hopefully you'll find a boyfriend or a girlfriend to get the hell out of there and you won't be dinging me. But I'd rather cough up 24 grand for the next 2 years where I know I'm coughing up than buying someplace, having the taxes double on me, and all of a sudden I'm losing 100 grand on the joint.
Sure, and if I were, you know, living in Lake Point Towers, given the way things have developed, I'd much rather be a renter there and have a lease and leave when I feel like it and not be stuck trying to unload an apartment that has an assessment hanging over it or a tax jump that's hanging over it and be sitting on the thing for another 2 or 3 years when I'd rather be living somewhere else. I'll take the lease and, you know, give myself some freedom. It's worth it to me to have that freedom to not own the thing.
Well, Jan, so when those places...
I can see that tide having turned for these big buildings.
Well, the city used to love a conversion. That's why Odd and I we always squabble about rent versus buy. And, you know, in the Chicago area, it always was. Because I lived in 70 West Huron for a long time, and we were always intended to go condo, and the market was horrible. This was in the 90s. And they were probably 10 years before they could go condo. The one at 400 East Ohio, Robin bought, or she ended up mentioning, but she lived there. The thing tried to go condo, Jan, and you probably know about the building. Two people bought the two penthouses. That was it. They were the only two owners for a decade. The rest of the place was still rental. And then finally, you know, it went condo. But when you looked at the building, say there's 100 units, when it went condo, the city got to revalue the whole place and probably revalued it 50, 80% higher. The taxes went way up collectively for everybody in there after it went condo. So my point always was you were better off keeping it rental because the taxes were lower.
Sure.
Well, now we're
right. And the city was loving it because each one of those apartments that sold separately generated transfer tax when the purchasers bought those things. So that was money that the city wasn't used to seeing. All of a sudden you had saleable real estate that could produce revenue. Lightfoot's talking about, you know, raising that, you know, to astronomical heights for big properties as a way of generating income. So the city was loving it, you know, in the 70s and 80s when these places converted because money they'd never seen before was coming in.
Why don't, I'm not going to give a shot to Lightfoot or Rahm or anybody. I am. Politicians sort of in general. And, you know, and I'll use the term regulators in any field. Why should you ever hire somebody as a mayor, as a president, as anything that's never been on the other side? I mean, you don't start out in the Army as a general. I mean, you're supposed to take orders for 30 years before you can give them. You know, how is it that these people don't understand that there's a limit to this crap? I mean, a building, I won't say the one that I'm in, one on the block here because I happen to know the owner. In 2000, their taxes were 80 grand, now they're 240. I mean, now all of a sudden, if a guy tries to sell it, what are you going to do? You're going to ding him 10 grand for the transfer? There needs to be somewhat of a limit here. And the people that are on the other side, the teachers, the whoever, they just don't get that the other side is getting a little squeezed, maybe more than a little. And it's right in front of their face. 50,000 right. people a year, 40,000 people a year are just saying, I'm out of here. And it's really the only thing you can do. There's no power you have to change any of these people. There's nothing you can ever, you can walk up and down with a sandwich sign in front of City Hall, everyone's going to pay attention to you, they're going to run over you. There's no effective government at any level, in anywhere along the line here that I would say. And they have this idea that these people, us, keep having more and more and more money, despite the fact that people are getting up and leaving and saying, I don't, and I'm proving it to you.
And then you have our governor who's, you know, his relationship with the taxing system is to buy an Astor Street house, which I never could, and then rip out the toilets and then not have to pay real estate taxes on it because it's uninhabitable. I mean, that if somebody in his income bracket feels that way about taxes, and that's sort of this is our leader in the state. I'm very offended. Everybody else is supposed to pay taxes that he doesn't deign to pay himself. So there's gross inequities in the way people can, you know, get a pass on this stuff. But to think that you're going to cure this budgetary mess by taxing people at the high end is not the solution at all. And I fear that, you know, if you listen to Elizabeth Warren and, you know, other people of her stripe, that's an absolutely ridiculous position to have, and it's divisive, and it's financially ridiculous, too.
Well, Jan, we have 10 minutes, so I actually would like to dig into this with you, because we probably aren't very far off in principle in what we believe on this, because I actually think a wealth tax is a pretty horrible idea. However, having said that, my mind is changing, is instead of just having my opinion, which I've always had since I was a kid, for God's sake, I'm trying to look and see what other people are seeing and why they're coming up with the seemingly dumb solutions there. Because they're obviously seeing something. They're not. There's such thing as a stupid human being. I mean, I don't believe. But that doesn't mean they can't be dumb. There's a difference between the two, is what I'm trying to say. Is a lot of younger people, and Maddie can, of course, chime in to this, even though he's not as young as he used to be. Of course, none of us are.
Yeah, I was going to say, that goes for you, too.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm dragging you right along with me. What can I say? Jan, I really do. When you read stuff, I don't know if you listened to the show last week when I was talking about that medical firm that came out with that drug. That really was, the U.S. paid for the research, the U.S. of A., meaning us. And it was kind of a special kind of patent where even, you know, that they were able to get the patent. I don't know what the difference is. I'm not a patent law kind of guy. But in the law, it's the, there's a law I quoted last week, two senators. And for that type of patent or whatever this is, you're supposed to be reasonable, essentially says be reasonable with the cost. Well, in 18 years, these guys have grossed $53 billion on this drug. And it's one of these leukemia, things.
Yep.
Now, I think that, you know, I'm willing to pay Edison whatever he deserves. I'm willing to pay Roosevelt. Jan, I think a lot of people look at this and they realize there was a law there. They think a lot of these gains, these wealth gains, are seriously ill-gotten. And I'm going to say that you can't accuse everybody of that. But you know what? And when I was a kid, I never would have really accused anybody of that. But right now, I see, you know, Bill Gates, you know, and I'm not going to go into cases or whatever because I honestly don't know, but if I had to bet you a dollar, I would bet on 10 occasions they bought a competitor and put him out of business, which is a felony according to the Clayton Act.
Right.
And I think that people abuse patents constantly. I think that in the drug business, if somebody found two generic drugs in his business, he went out and bought them both. Instead of being 5 hours a pill, he was back up to the 40 he was before. I think this stuff, a lot of people see a lot of these gains as people having this close relationship with Washington. Stuff is not these are crimes that aren't being, I'm talking about everybody, and I'm not talking about that at all. I'm just saying, but people, the guys that take the thing that's $5 and make it a $600 EpiPen, those kinds of, they look at those people and they say, how the hell could you, when everybody else is struggling along, how exactly did you make $2 billion in 2 years? And when you dig into it, a lot of times, it's a pretty ugly story.
It is.
And a lot of times it's not. I mean, I understand there are people that do the work, that when everybody else is sitting on their ass watching a football game, are working in the basement, come up with a software program, and if that guy makes $1 billion, my hat's off to him. If he hires 100 people along the way, I'll take two hats off to him if I can put two hats on. I mean, I'm not, but I just think an awful lot of what we see now is some dance between government, between whatever. Now, what's going to happen if this company that paid the charge of $53 billion, you know what, Jan, I want 20 back. If somebody's got to sell a trophy wife or a bass boat or a yacht, I don't care. You know, if Commonwealth Edison, all of a sudden, if the feds find out that their lobbyists with Illinois has caused the electric rates to be 30% higher than they should be, that everybody I know in some neighborhood that can't afford it, that just lost his job, if he's paying that, you know what, Jan, I want some scalps. And I never used to feel that way. That money is ill-gotten. Now, Elizabeth Warren's story, let's assume everybody's like that.
Right.
And go take a chip out of every wealthy person's hide. I don't buy that at all. But now, first, I would change the piggy move-up tax that wealthy people use on stock, where you can, You give the stock to your son and the basis becomes today's, even though you bought it for 2 cents. I change that in a second. A couple of rules I would change, but that does, it's not the same as saying every wealthy person is a crook.
Yet, of course. You know, I mean, I had to,
so where do you,
myself.
Disagree with me there, by the way. Somewhere tell me where I'm nuts, or are you sort of on the same page?
Oh, I'm on the same page. I for years had, I suffered from gout periodically, and the drug really to treat it is colchicine, which is a saffron-based pill that's, it dates back to the Egyptians, that breaks up the uric acid crystals in your joints. And
I thought the drug was
the
absence of beer.
This was a cheap drug that, I could have, take it, whenever I wanted. It cost really nothing, because it's an herbal, really. I mean, there's nothing, chemically, vital about it that makes it useful as a drug to treat this condition. Some clown, I probably use that word, decided to patent this and give it a trade name, Colchris, and the price shot up like 10 times overnight, and it's just continued to go up, and it's now classed with insulin as a ridiculously overpriced drug. And I fail to see how anybody can get proprietary rights in something like that, that you could probably make it yourself out of the plant saffron and market it, and why can't other people market it too? I don't understand how the system can benefit everybody except the consumer, really, who needs the drug sometimes. So I think that's a manipulation of patent rights and proprietary rights in a trade name or whatever, and it's ridiculous. There's something grossly unfair about it. I could start there, the EpiPens and all this other stuff that they feed off of people's need for things, maybe life-saving, needs. But the fact that they can get away with this, and that the FDA and the congressional hearings about these things don't see a problem there, how are you supposed to see that other than as an abuse of the system?
Why do we figure? I was asking this Friday. Either you or Dr. Blade, more reflective guys than me. Why is it that as a society, we don't want to get ripped off, but when somebody abuses the system, like somebody going back on pension 3 days or having two pensions instead of one, same state or whatever, why don't we want to take it away from somebody when they don't have it? Because our attitude is, oh, no, he's got it. He can have that one fair and square. we don't want to take it from anybody, and yet we're pissed off when it happens. I mean, I would say if Commonwealth Edison has been doing this for 20 years, every single person on the board, I ban from any board anywhere. I give them all $1 million fine personally, because they knew this was going on, Jen.
Sure.
I mean, and all the people who were the chairman on down, or the CEO who's making, I don't know what they make there, but it's probably five times what you could put an ad in the paper tomorrow and somebody would show up and do the job. I want it all back. You got to sell your second house, sell it. It's more to the point. It's like this thing that we were talking about with Audrey earlier, that if we stop, and we heard that part where if we put a property tax freeze on in Illinois right now, in order for us, and then the rest of the economy kept growing the way it's growing, which isn't very much, it will take 28 years.
That just knocked me out when you said that earlier. I could not even get my head around that.
That's how far askew we are here. I mean, when you start talking about room and board at Notre Dame is half of the median income of a worker. What planet are we at?
Well, did you hear that they now have mandated at Notre Dame that you have to spend your first 2 years on campus, as opposed to just you had to spend your freshman year on campus, and then if you wanted to go off campus, you could, and that's no longer the case. So I see that as
well,
it looks like a grab of some kind.
The economics of it, Jan, when it was $1,200 and we were there, they had so many people on campus, they were booting them off, right?
Yeah.
And now that it's $16,000, they're forced them to stay on. Duh. Where's the mystery there? Manny, I think anybody could get that. The guys on your basketball team, let's wait a minute. It's so friggin' high, you gotta force people to pay it. It was a little too cheap, you gotta force people out of here. The laws of economics are fairly strong, actually. I mean, how do you not understand that one?
Well, it's like this, every university now is in this amenities race. Oh, yeah. I got to have, you know, the best food court or the best lazy river for relaxation or the best workout rooms or in order to attract the students that have got the financial aid or the dollars that they want.
All right, John, we got to go, bud. We'll talk. We'll kick around this more next week, buddy.
Yep.
Have a nice week. SP Futures up. I'm sorry, down 12.75. NASDAQ Futures down 37.50. We're talking about markets, Mr. David Adelman. Right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. David Adelman with us as well. S&P futures, I'm going to get this stuff all up here. I got all these other things open here with all this bad news on this CPI stuff. S&P futures down 12. We've been here pretty much since the shots got fired in Hong Kong. So NASDAQ futures down 32.75. Had a big week last week, but we're coming back the other way today a little bit. Dow down 126. Individual stocks in the Dow. 3M down a buck. Boeing down 240. Nothing crazy here. Apple down a buck 40. But nothing really nuts. We've got WBA, which is Walgreens, up 456. These guys are deciding about going private and stuff. I don't know. We'll talk to David. David thinks we did last week that might be the top of the market, somebody going private at this point. But anyway, we will see. We're in Europe. We've got the DAX up down 50.4%. These guys have come back up a little bit. FTSE down 88.2%. Macron down 6.1%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 60.3%. Not much there, but you can imagine the Chinese stocks not doing so hot. Shanghai down 54. That's 1.8%. Hang Seng down 724. That's 2.6%. That's a big move. Bonds were 1.945 here. Looks like by the end of the week, we could be 2%, which is the highest we've been in a while. Bund minus 0.26, highest they've been in a while. Japan minus 0.06. Be interested to see if they come positive. I don't know. I'm thinking they will. Gold down 30 cents, 1462. Not sure what all happened to gold here, but it's going the wrong way for me. Anyway, silver about 3 cents, 1678. What do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports, man? A lot of sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have low visibility and snow out in the area causing all kinds of issues on the side streets as people are heading out this morning. The good news is that it's Veterans Day, so a lot of folks are off of work today, especially financial institutions and schools and stuff like that. So it's lighter traffic volumes, but still slow travel times. Give yourself plenty of time as you're heading out this morning. We don't have any accidents to report on the actual expressways. Edens, Kennedy, Eisenhower, Stevenson, all moving slowly, but no accidents to report. That earlier crash on the Jane Addams is all clear, so that's good news. Southside Expressway, same thing. But off the expressways, especially in the western and northwestern suburbs, there are spin-outs and little crashes everywhere. Downers Grove, we have a crash at Main and 63rd. Looks like Lamont, there's a crash at Lamont Road and 87th Street. Just east of there, 55th and Madison, there is a crash. Kedzie at 31st Street in the city, there's a crash. But all kinds of issues, won't read them all, but just give yourself plenty of time and keep that in mind. Drive slow and safely, especially on the side streets, because there's apparently slippery conditions. And that snow will continue throughout the morning. Expecting a couple of inches of accumulation, but not much in the city. Right now it's snowy and foggy out there and 32 degrees, which is our high for the day because we actually cool down even more this evening. And we'll be down near 12 degrees for our overnight low before we have a very cold day tomorrow, a high of just 24 with wind chills in the single digits. Right now it's snowy and 32, and that's our high. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 86 today. That sounds pretty good. Right now it's clear and 61. In sports, Bears snapped their four-game losing streak at home against Detroit, winning 20-13. Bears were down 6-0 late in the second quarter, scored a touchdown, and then scored two more in the third quarter for 20 straight points en route to that 20-13 win. Mitchell Trubisky threw three touchdown passes and no interceptions. The Cardinals were in a barn burner against the Buccaneers, but lost to Tampa Bay 30-27. Sunday Night Football, it was the Vikings over the Cowboys in Dallas, 28-24. It was a great game. NHL hockey, Blackhawks with a nice win over Toronto, 5-4. Coyotes were off. They're at the Capitals tonight. Bulls were off. They'll host the Knicks tomorrow night. Suns blew out the Nets, 138-112. Chief.
David, how are you?
I'm fine.
Maddie, I don't want to ask you. I'm sure you were over with the high-end people and not with the great unwashed yesterday.
No, actually, yesterday I was in the south end zone with the great unwashed, but the seats were actually very nice. And
I think the south end zone is not. I think those are permit seats.
Well, when I say great unwashed, I mean I didn't have access to the indoors. Like I like to sit typically at the United Club side, where you can go inside and warm up when you need to.
Well, the great unwashed is the upper deck on the west side.
No, yeah, didn't do that.
Those people, they have their own separate gates. You can't even mingle with the washed.
That's true. But yeah, we got tickets last minute, and the only reason I went, I typically don't go when it's chilly out. The only reason I went is Jill had never been to, my fiance had never been to a regular season game, and she really wanted to go. So we went, took the L down there and did the little walk down through the tunnel and got in there at about 11:45. Game kicked off at noon. And then we were back home by 4 or 4:15.
How did you get home?
took the train.
How'd you get to the train?
We walked.
To where?
To Roosevelt.
Okay, the last two times I was there for night games, they wouldn't let you go back down Roosevelt.
Well, yeah, I mean, we walked, took the train to Roosevelt, walked to the game, and walked back to Roosevelt, took the train home.
I had to walk to Jackson and Wabash to get the train at 11:30 at night. I said, never again.
That's not what you want to do.
No.
Especially at night.
No.
Yeah, it was a little chilly, although it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that horrible yesterday or anything.
It was like 42 degrees.
Now, Green Bay, I think, might have been colder last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, yeah, no snow, it was 42 degrees. The wind is kind of blocked where we were sitting, so it wasn't that bad. The feet got a little cold toward the end of the game. But, you know, had a couple beers, had a sausage, watched the game.
Beer's $12?
You can find them, so the ones I got were $10.50. You can find them a little cheaper than that, and you can get them more expensive than that, depending on what you get.
Ah.
But the Miller Lights were like $10.50 for like the tall boy guy.
Did you see the catch the guy made, Rudolph in the end zone, the one-handed job?
Yeah, the Vikings guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he had two touchdowns last night. That was, yeah, they were underdogs, and they went and won outright. That was a good win for them, and the Packers are 8-2, and the Vikings are 7-3. So even though the Bears did win and got back to 4-5, and are not out of it yet, they got a lot of ground to make up with those two teams. They're both really good.
Is if we had to rank the worst trades in Chicago history, I got to put that Olsen guy in the top five.
I mean, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
and they drafted him. He was good for the Bears, and then Mike Martz came in and said, "We don't need tight ends in this offense," and they traded him.
Did they even get a bag of balls for him?
I think they drafted him with the last pick in the first round, and I think they got a third round pick for him.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It
was the year they drafted him, the year after they were in the Super Bowl.
The whole idea of coaches coaching for themselves and not looking and see what they have. I mean, the one thing my friends always say, Kelly's not so bad at Notre Dame. I said, what do you mean? If, what's his name? The guy from Pittsburgh showed up, Jerome Bettis, they'd make him a guard or they'd make him transfer. We don't do no stinking fullbacks. Right, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
David, what do you make of this? This Hong Kong. I looked last night; we were down like 2 points, and then I looked later, and I see they're shooting people, and I see we're down more. I don't know.
That's a big factor, and it's a good segue because for once, instead of you asking me all the questions, I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
The Shanghai was down. I forget a percent, and the. Hong Kong was down 2.6%, and
right.
They did attribute a lot of it to the weekend protests and, you know, shootings and this and that and the other. But they also said that the data, and I'm not disagreeing with it, but I'm trying to understand it, the data from China was very, very negative. And so here's the data. China's producer prices fell the most in more than 3 years. So the prices for the producers down to the lowest level in 3 years. But consumer prices rose at the fastest pace in almost 8 years. So in other words, to me, what it says, and, you know, I'm not a fundamentalist like you, the producers paid the least in 3 years, but they charged the most to consumers in 8 years. So I get, while that's bad for the consumers, but one would think that, you know, for the producers, that would widen their margins and actually be positive for their bottom line, no?
I'm going to say that the people doing the two things are totally screwed up, that the things in the producer basket, for instance, like oil or something, might be 20% of the producer basket, but when it flows through to the consumer basket, it's 5% somehow, that they don't match up.
I see. Okay. Yeah, because I was really having a difficult time with those two items.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you have in the producer price index here, I don't even know how this, but I'm just an example, I don't know. If you have like how much like doctors get paid, which is kind of going down in the producer's thing, yet how much you and I pay for medical care is going up.
Somehow
there's a disconnect there. So I don't think they necessarily match up. You know, we should do, David, one of these days when we don't have other stuff to talk about, which is never now. We always have something to talk about. I'll plunk the PPI and the CPI in two different pages in front of me here. And we'll kind of look at, you know, not every line, because that'd take us forever.
Yeah, because they usually come out a day or at most 2 days apart. It used to always be PPI first and then CPI second, and then in recent years it's changed at times. But I just conceptually from, you know, memory, because I do write them down on paper, even though I don't, you know, examine them with the fine-tooth comb like you do, I think they generally match up pretty good. Now, the core part of the PPI and CPI, that, you know, fluctuates and varies much more widely.
I'm going to say that looking around the Chicago area, it is, again, I got clued on to this by the guy from White Castle Hamburgers that was on CNBC, is that the if you look at the restaurant business and bar industry, which, you know, I have a lot of friends in the industry, so I'm much more, you know, on to that one, or even your Monopoly, your Commonwealth Edison, your electric bill and your food on the plate you get at a restaurant now has virtually nothing to do with how much that place charges for whatever. And I can go to the Restaurant Depot tomorrow, and I'm going to say the prices vary basically on supply and demand, but on average, if I buy a case of 12 dozen jumbo eggs, I'm talking $10. Somewhere between. I've had it as low as 7, and I've had it as high as 14, but let's say $10 or $11. David, one omelet's $12.50 in our neighborhood.
Right, no, I get it.
I mean, we're not even on the same planet.
And it's not even 4 eggs anymore.
Right.
It's 3 if you're lucky, and maybe 2.
Yeah, so now that person, it's all in the lease, it's all in the electric bill, it's all in the taxes for that building. Well, taxes would be in the lease. It's in the gas bill. Okay, so it has nothing to do with what's on your plate. I mean, some restaurant people that I know will say that their most expensive dish costs them $4.50 and the price is $22.50. I mean, we're not even on the same plan. It used to be 2.5 to 1, you know, maybe 3 to 1. Now it's 5 everywhere.
Wow.
So it's, I mean, it has to do with, this is a nice place. It's on the river. Whatever, not none of these places I'm talking about are. It's on the river. If you want to sit here and watch the girls go by on the boat, it's going to cost you $50. If you want to drink, it's $50. You want your behind in the seat, it's still $50. It doesn't matter, right? So that's how those...
But basically, getting back to my question...
That's how they could disconnect.
You're just saying that the way they produce the figures aren't jiving one to the other?
Yes. I mean, that the like cost of meals out is going to pick up the $12.50 number for the omelet. And the producer price index is going to say, hey, the price of eggs hasn't gone up in 3 years. Yet your final thing, and even going into the local 7-Eleven, it's going to be $3.50 a dozen when the guy's paying a buck. You know, so even whatever it is, it's the property where the 7-Eleven is, it's his taxes, it's his gas bill. So the stuff you don't count gets in there between the producer and the consumer is what I'm saying. I don't know if that's happening.
I would be surprised in their society, though, that, you know, I mean, these kind of numbers, especially when they come out together, you know, don't look too good. I would think that they would clamp down on the inflation, on the CPI, you know, and try and knock it down rather than saying, oh, yeah, our print is highest in 8 years.
I mean, I'm not saying what happened. You asked me how could it happen. I'm saying is they're not weighted properly in something.
Okay.
Or there's things in the consumer price thing that impact those costs that somehow aren't in the producer price index.
Right, I get it.
You know, taxes probably being one of them.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, you would think that some adult at the top of the chain would say, wait a minute, that looks awful.
Right.
You guys make
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I couldn't figure it out, the connection, number one. And number two, I was shocked that they would print that.
Well, I mean, here we have people that on a daily basis will say that lowering interest rates a quarter helps the consumer because his rates go down. Yet we know not one consumer, other than maybe a mortgage, you know, and that's if you happen to get one today, which people don't do very often. But who's it helping? Nobody's credit card went down.
Right.
I mean, I don't know where. So it's a question of definition. And this stuff, we were just talking this morning. I'll ask you this, and I don't know the answer. And if I knew the answer, I would, you know, I'll peep it.
Not have to ask me.
Well, I mean, where was it? I was looking at John's place that he taught at Prairie State, and I'll get this back up here. That in 2000 and maybe you know the answers. I'm asking everybody. Nobody knows. What do you think happened in 2000, where are we here? N-O-P. I know my, there we go, I know my alphabet. What do you think happened in 1999, David? Why all of a sudden in 1998 was every university, at least in Illinois that I've coughed up so far, and a few in Ohio I've checked, the in-state and out-of-state were the same price? In 1999, everybody, Ohio State, Michigan, everybody in Illinois now bifurcated this number. This is Prairie State. It's a junior college down in, you know, wherever, South Cook County. 1998, in-state tuition, $1,770. Out-of-state tuition, $1,770. 1999, in-state tuition, $1,770. Hold on to your hat. Out-of-state tuition, $6,180. All in 1 year. If you look at every single university, from Richard J. Daley City College to University of Illinois to Wisconsin to Indiana to Michigan, Ohio State, I mean, not like Notre Dame, Northwestern, they don't care where you come from. But the other schools, every one of them jumped their out-of-state by a factor of 2, 3, 4, depending on where they are, and they've stayed that way ever since.
The only thing I can think of, I mean, maybe it has something, which I can't fathom what it would be, with the internet, because if you remember, that's when the dot-com bust went, but before that, the internet, you know, 1997, 8, 9, you know, was exploding, you know, not just the companies, but the usage. And the other thing is, if they kept up until that point, the out-of-state tuition, you know, the same, actually, in some cases, even lower than the in-state, is because they wanted, you know, transferees in.
Well, everybody wanted to start accepting people from out-of-state, paying three times as much, and they'd accept your people. Now, like,
right, and then all of a sudden, they must have just said, hey, we don't need them, and if they want us, they're going to pay up.
All right, so assuming we look at tuition, which I'm not so sure they even do, well, they probably do private school tuition, and the CPI... Now, in 1999, what do you do with that number? Is the 3.5 times higher for out of state? Is that a stupido tax?
I doubt it's put in.
Yeah, I doubt it's put in. It's like
I really doubt it's too in.
I doubt it's
all these places now. I read a Kiplinger report because, you know, there's some, you know, younger folks for my partner, you know, grandkids and that kind of stuff, you know, getting to the age where they're looking around. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm not talking Ivy League. I'm not talking Notre Dame. I'm not talking, you know, even something like Northwestern or whatever. But these small, you know, liberal arts colleges that are high level, you know, well-rated and, you know, top 50 and whatever, I mean, 65,000. 75,000 tuition. I mean, some names that you haven't even heard of. Middlebury. I mean, I've heard of it.
Middlebury's a big school.
You know, and I know it's prominent, but geez, it's unbelievable.
Well, I don't know how to even handle this if I'm a CPI guy. Is that a stupido tax or is that a raise in tuition? Obviously, if you stay in your own state, it hasn't affected you. You're out of state. Is that your fault or is that? But if everybody does it, and all of a sudden Ohio State, instead of accepting 100% of the people or 90% of the people from Ohio, so no, screw that. The people from Michigan pay more, so we're going to take 40% of the people of Michigan. And the Michigan people say the same thing. All of a sudden, how is that not a raise in tuition?
It is. It is. And again, just anecdotally, getting back to these kids, there's a big interest for whatever, forensic science,
yeah,
pre-med and whatever in University of Texas. So, you know, there's evidently a huge, huge gap between in-state and out-of-state, you know, tuition for the difference between in-state and out-of-state tuition. So what a lot of these, you know, parents are doing is saying, hey, you know, we'll make the kid a resident, or we'll be a resident. We'll buy a hand-me-down shack, you know, and that'll be our resident, you know, residency, and we'll get it a year or two before the kid has to go in, rent it out for a little bit, and then when the kid goes down, we're a resident, we can pay into in-state tuition.
But, David, how can room and board be half a year's income of a median worker?
No, I know. It's crazy. And that's where, you know, debt, all the debt comes out. That's why, you know, there's billions and billions and billions of owed debt from students.
These are Illinois schools. I mean, I hope I'm not insulting anybody, but to be honest with you, I haven't heard of these places. I mean, other than that, Monmouth College, $38,000.
Millikan, I've heard of it.
Millikan University, $35,000. McHenry University, $31,000.
Isn't there a Carthage College?
Well, I'm just in the L's. Loyola's $44,000 with $15,000 room and board. That's up there. Lewis, $32,000. Lake Forest, $47,000. Where's Knox College, $47,000?
Yeah, that's Illinois.
Well, I mean, I've sort of Judson University, $30,000.
I haven't even heard of that one.
Illinois Wesleyan, $47,000. Illinois Wesleyan's like Northwestern, for God's sake. But at least their room and board's only 11 versus 16. Illinois IIT's, $47,000, which I get. Illinois College, who's that? It's a private, $33,000.
I don't know that.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of places. Elmhurst, $37,000. I would never guess that. Well, DePaul's, DePaul's actually reasonable in there. Rarick is Columbia's, $27,000. They're one of the highest room and board. But this is up there. Name me a school. They don't find it for you, David. This is a great site.
It's simple. Like I said, I read pages and pages, and this is the best value and whatever. And some of the ones with the best value just because of graduation rate and, you know, average daily coming out or whatever. I mean, these were quote unquote value schools, and I couldn't find the one where the average tuition was under $60,000, and that did not include room and board.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm just talking about tuition.
Right.
Case Western. Where are they? In Cleveland? Where are they?
Yes.
$49,000, $15,000 for room and board. $15,000 for room and board in Cleveland, for God's sake. We're talking about the mistake by the lake? I didn't just say that, did I? Here's one for you, Maddie. Cincinnati College of Mortuary Science. $20,000.
Wow.
It takes you 2 years to be, take, Cleveland Institute of Art, $42,000. Cleveland Institute of Music, $42,000. College of Worcester, $50,000. Wow.
That's Massachusetts, isn't it?
No, it's Ohio.
Oh, Ohio.
These are all in Ohio. College of Worcester is $50,000. Columbia College of Art and Design, $36,000. Defiance College, $32,000. Denison, $51,000. Oh, those guys always think they're way up there. Denison totals $64,000. That's a number. But I mean, these are the numbers are so far out there. How can you trust the real numbers, David? I mean, that they pony up with. I mean, it's now the president's talking tomorrow, and Powell's in front of Congress for 2 days. So this could be. There could be a few incendiaries this week, but I tend to doubt it. We had workers over, David, so my front door was open all day.
Wow.
Saturday, so the place was 50 degrees, so I was holed up in the back room on the computer doing research. And, I'm just digging through these things, and the more you research the numbers down to the bottom line, you're just like, you know, what are we talking about? The Fed, I was going through the Fed numbers. And you know what's surprising to me is I get this feeling that the Fed has to be doing more and more to keep the market moving up, but almost less and less. I mean, last quarter last year, the lowest growth I saw in the money supply was still in the mid-3s, maybe 4s. So it wasn't like they went negative like Volcker, you know,
right,
which caused the market to go collapsing. They were still increasing the money supply at least equal to the growth in the economy, maybe as much as 2 times as much, and the market corrected 20%. I mean, how dependent have we become on this extra cash? I mean, I'm starting to worry. I got to stop looking at this stuff. But I mean, I like
no, and we've talked about it really for weeks. I mean, you know, I started thinking about, you know, because you're one of probably two people on earth who look at it anymore, and then, you know, I look at the buybacks and the corporate debt, and I say to myself, you know, self, if those factors weren't in there, if they weren't financing debt at, you know, very low rates and paying low taxes, and buying back, you know, stock and the Fed with the liquidity and money supply, where would we be? And I don't know the answer, but I would guess at least 20% lower.
Well, can we still, now I'm starting to hone in for my clients, some of these stocks have been beaten up. Some of the things that are moving now, we only got 30 seconds, but your Cleveland Cliffs, your U.S. Steel, some of those things, even Teva, the Israeli
generic.
Well, they've got some case law issues, but is it time to look at some of these places and not just chase the big ones?
I'd rather buy them on the way up. I don't like ones that have been that beaten down in our natural resources taking a shot.
All right, we'll talk on it Thursday. Maybe we'll come up with a couple of names. S&P Futures down 12 and a quarter where it was when we started the show. NASDAQ Futures down 32, same spot as well. We'll see what happens more with Hong Kong. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.